Hello, everyone, and good morning or good evening, depending on the time you're listening to us. I'm Zach, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Sham. Sham, say hello.
What up?
And this is Required Viewing, once again, the podcast where Shams and I break down all of what you need to be watching in this amazing sea of high-quality content. Well, usually we would be in that sea right now, and we are in a bit of a drought. It is also, you know, in addition to the television drought because of COVID, Shams, it is also very hot. I don't know about you. I know you, I see your ceiling fan going, but I'm in LA right now, in the midst of an energy crisis slash heat wave. And it is amazing how much 2 degrees makes a difference when you turn your air conditioning up by 2 degrees to save energy.
Yeah. Well, so it was very, very hot last week here. So I'm in the Northeast. So Zach and I are actually a true coast to coast show, but it actually cooled down. So it at night, it's actually gone below 60s here. So we are in actually a cold wave, but we're expecting another heat wave next week. So.
All right. I guess it is actual nighttime in your neck of America.
My neck of the woods.
All right. Well, Shams, why don't you tell our listeners what we are going to talk about today, if for some reason they didn't read the title of the episode?
Yeah. So today is a first for us because today we are going to focus on a singular TV show, and a TV show which has only one episode. And that TV show is HBO's new series, Lovecraft Country. It just debuted this past Sunday, August 17th. Lovecraft Country is based off Matt Ruff novel called, obviously, Lovecraft Country. And it is about an African-American man in the 1950s whose father has disappeared, and his father has left him a letter with clues to meet him in somewhere in Massachusetts. And so the young man goes on a journey to go find his father. But it's deeply entrenched in the works of Mr. H.P. Lovecraft. So there's a lot of references to H.P. Lovecraft and to, in general, like the 1950s pulp comic scene and sci-fi and horror scene. So it's kind of like an homage to that. But it's also a sort of like historical drama about the 1950s as well. So yesterday was the debut episode. So today's what Zach and I want to do is we want to just talk about kind of what we thought about the season premiere. And then what we plan to do is in about 10 weeks after the 10 episodes air, we want to come together and talk about the finale and kind of see kind of what our initial thoughts were compared to our final thoughts. So this is a new thing for us. We usually recap series. We usually start at the end. So we have rarely, I don't think we've ever started at the beginning, actually. So this is something new for us. So we're trying something out. And I think we may try to do this for more TV series in the future.
Yeah, I guess first question, do you want to do, spoilers or no spoilers for this first episode?
So I think since it's the premiere, we have to be a bit spoilerific just because you have to say some stuff just for the premise, right? Okay. I think when we get to the finale, we'll figure that episode out as we get there. But I think we're going to have to be a bit spoilerific. Pretty much everything I've said so far is not a spoiler. And I think maybe we can have a cutoff, but like, I think we're going to have to talk about the last 10 minutes because I think the last 10 minutes is very important to kind of where the series is going. And we can't really talk about the series as a whole without talking about the last 10 minutes. So
yeah, I think that's also before we begin, I just want to say, like, if there was any doubt into our claim that we don't do much planning for this podcast, the fact that I just asked that question because if there's one thing we would discuss beforehand, it would be like whether or not we're going to do a spoiler episode or no spoiler episode. So if you had any doubt, believe us when we say we do zero planning for this podcast.
Also, I literally just finished watching this episode like 5 minutes before we started airing. So like we are literally winging this. This is just literally winging it by the thing. But
all right. So let's just go through it chronologically, I guess, because I think the first thing I want to talk about, I guess, is if you're not familiar with H.P. Lovecraft. Obviously, this isn't a Lovecraft, an H.P. Lovecraft story, but it's based on a book that's based on H.P. Lovecraft's stories. And if you know anything about H.P. Lovecraft, you've probably heard of Cthulhu or some other version of his very weird alien slash demon looking creatures. Cthulhu is like the big, like flying squid thing with wings. There's, you know, he influenced a lot of weird monsters. I think there's actually a genre called like weird horror or weird sci-fi that kind of is attributed to this. But so I was wondering as I started watching this, like I don't know much about H.P. Lovecraft and I don't know much about the book it's based on. So my first thought was, you know, how long it's H.P. Lovecraft, how long is this going to take to get weird? About 30 seconds. Because about 30 seconds in, Jackie Robinson slices a Cthulhu in half with a baseball bat.
Yeah, Shums. I mean, I think it's very interesting. I like the choice of them just saying, look, we could just start normally, but like that would just be a false promise to what the show's going to be long term. Because after this first sequence, it actually becomes a pretty fairly normal drama for like a good 30, 40 minutes. So I think they could have easily just said, we'll just start normal. But they said, no, we want the people who tune in to know that, like, if you're into this stuff, then now you're committed. And if you're not into it, then just get out. So I actually like that because it gives the viewer a litmus test, I think, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I find it super interesting because, like, this is technically, I think it's horror. Like, I don't know how the remaining episodes are going to be, but in theory, like, H.P. Lovecraft, it was the early horror genre, and I think this still is supposed to be a horror show. And the textbook recipe for how you start a horror series is you always start from a place of safety, a place of normalcy. In any horror movie or horror, you know, series, start from that place, that safe place, that place of normalcy, and it gradually, you know, devolves into the horror. So you kind of got to start normal, but you also, I think they walked the fine line of starting with this. I mean, it's a dream sequence since we're doing spoilers. So the weirdness is out there. It's the first 2 minutes is very good for establishing like this is, you know, this is an H.P. Lovecraft inspired story and it's going to get weird. But then they kind of immediately backturn to that safe place and that normal. I think technically after that it's the bus ride, and then
yeah,
with the introduction
I wouldn't
of
actually
Uncle
use
George's
the word
character,
safe place, because it's really not safe at all, but it's just normal.
Well, I'm talking about not the, because I guess there's the bus ride, which I wasn't thinking about, but the next big scene I remember was Uncle George and his wife, I think Hippolyta, in Chicago, and then most of the opening act, I would say, takes place in segregated Chicago, and it's very much this big block party where the black community in Chicago, it's kind of their safe community space where they are, you know, it's pretty much just the black community, and they're kind of like isolated in like their own little world, and then gradually
one white cop
as they
that
leave
shows
that world,
up.
Yeah, but as they leave that world, it gets scarier and scarier.
So that's what's weird is that so it starts with this kind of surreal dream horror sci-fi sequence, then it goes to reality, but the reality is this bus ride, which still shows segregation and still shows the kind of like issues that are going on in the real world, and then it's sequences to like this like kind of like fantasy, but just this like kind of peaceful environment where there's no significant issues going on, and then it goes back again to segregation. So it's kind of an interesting thing how it kind of flips. But to just wrap up the beginning, I think what I found interesting about the beginning is that it very much plays like it starts like kind of like a typical 1950s like radio program kind of adventure serial, and then it gets super weird, right? Where it has like the alien is the one thing, but then like Cthulhu comes, and then Jackie Robinson comes out of Cthulhu, and then Jackie Robinson kills Cthulhu. So it was an interesting choice. I didn't find it to be that like scary or like visually that great, to be honest with you. I just found it, in some ways I was almost like laughing, and I don't know if that was like part of the intent, because I was like, this is like kind of hilarious. But like, that's also because like I have consumed a lot of just like pulp content and like Lovecraftian inspired content before, so for me it was almost like comedic. But I don't know if that was
intense. I think it was for me as well. I'm not a big, like, my only exposure to Lovecraft is usually like board games that are kind of like inspired. And I haven't even played very many of those games, but it tends to pop up in other, you know, both video games and board games, just like his, you know, things that are references to his work there. But yeah, I think that opening, was clearly intended to be over the top and kind of set the tone that like this is H.P. Lovecraft. And then I think the next interesting thing that I want to talk about is both, you know, after in the bus ride scene and then later on in Chicago, there is this question of, you know, how can someone like Atticus, the main character, is a black man in the 1950s, be a fan of, you know, H.P. Lovecraft when, for those of you who don't know, H.P. Lovecraft is a massive racist, just like unqualified. Like, so I listened to the podcast, HBO has put out like the official podcast for Lovecraft Country, and the two co-hosts actually read a poem of Lovecraft, which is referenced in the show, and I can't even say the name of the poem because even just the name is superbly racist.
You definitely can't say that name, Zach.
But you can't either. They read the entire, well, I don't know if it was the entire poem, but they read a good amount of it, probably too much. And honestly, the words that they read were frankly the most racist thing I've ever heard. Like, far beyond anything I've actually ever heard, like words spoken out loud in any movie or anything I've watched. So massive unqualified racist. And I think this is a timely question, even though this show's kind of been in the works for 2 years, but just, you know, recently there is this question of like, how can you, especially more recently with the Me Too movement and also with more recently JK Rowling, how can you, or like, is it okay to love something like a piece of content or a story where the creator is flawed?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, that's the most compelling part of this series for me. And I'm kind of jumping the gun maybe a little bit, like, I find that aspect to be the unique thing that this series can do that I think I haven't seen in many other series before. Because I think that's the fascinating aspect of this, right, is setting... how do you deal with his Lovecraft's... how do you like tell a Lovecraftian story in general to a modern day audience, let alone how do you tell a Lovecraftian story with the central characters all being black to a modern day audience? That's the most compelling part to me. And I actually find the other aspects of the show to be kind of not as interesting for me. But that's what I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to take that on. Because I think the show is very meta and self-aware, right? And it's clearly recognizes that, like, H.P. Lovecraft was a massive racist, and yet we're going to create a show that is Lovecraftian, and it's going to have its central character be a black man who likes Lovecraftian stories. So... it'll be interesting. I think, I don't know how it's going to go, but that's the compelling part for me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it definitely deals with this theme, which it's come up before. It reminds me a bit of, there was a podcast, I think it was actually David Tennant's podcast, which is a great podcast if anyone hasn't heard it. David Tennant of Doctor Who just has a podcast where he interviews random people. And one of the episodes he had, I think Whoopi Goldberg on the podcast, and they had a really long discussion about the fact that it was weird for a long time for Black people to be fans of anything sci-fi. And so when Whoopi Goldberg was like a huge Star Trek fan, like it was a big deal to her to see growing up, see Uhura in, I forgot which Star Trek it was, but one of the first Black roles in a, like in any television series, but especially in sci-fi. And that was inspired Whoopi to go on to take a role in the later, I think it was Next Generation. Shams, you're the bigger Star Trek fan here, so fill me in.
No, she was in she was in Next Generation, yeah. But she was I forget if she was in the film first and then in the series. I forget how it went.
Yeah, so there's this thing that Lovecraft Country is kind of dealing with as like a this weird historical thing where there's this idea of if you are someone who's not typically considered like supposed to be a part of community, whether that's like the sci-fi fandom, it is like, does that discourage you from like continuing to love that thing? Or does it mean you should fight to be a part of that community, whether or not they want you there? And I think that's one of the themes that I'm picking up on in this first episode that I hope they continue to unravel that question.
Yeah, I think the sad thing you can say is that to some extent, I don't know if much has changed, right? I think it's changed to some extent, but like, I think a lot of people still think that there's certain genres that certain demographics just aren't supposed to be into, right? I think what the show is showing, that it's showing how do you deal with an author who hates you as a reader? How do you deal with an author with a problematic past? And then how do you as a reader like see yourself and connect with like the author's stories and the protagonist? And then how do you deal with conveying that to other people? Who don't understand why you would be connecting to that? Like in the very beginning, that this old woman tells the title character, whose name is Tice. I guess we should say that so we don't have to keep saying a Black man. We can just say Tice. But they tell Tice.
Is it a tick?
Tick. Sorry. I had a tick.
Atticus. I think tick Atticus. Is short for Atticus.
Atticus is his full name.
Atticus.
She says, how do you, he's talking about John Carter of Mars, which is a very old, famous sci-fi story. And in that story, John Carter is an ex-Confederate soldier. And she was kind of questioning how he can like a story about an ex-Confederate soldier. And she kind of mentioned that doesn't matter if he's ex, he still was Confederate. And then he has this good line where he says, stories are like humans. You have to sometimes, you don't ignore the flaws, but you still have to accept them with them and then find the good in it, right? Something like that. It's not the direct quote. So I found that to be like a very, I agree with that personally, right? So I think partly why I like this is because like, I think for me as a brown male, I have been in very similar situations where most of the stories and fiction that I've grown up with do not have characters who look like me or from my background whatsoever. And they actually have authors who probably had some slight racist, xenophobic comments about me at some point. But I still have been able to connect with these stories and these characters. So like for me, like I very much like agree with that mentality that Atticus has with Lovecraft.
Yeah. And then, so in a way, I think the two unavoidable comparisons with this country, the first is Watchmen, because I think there's a similar thing there. And, you know, with the 2019 Damon Lindelof version that we discussed on a previous episode, that was a show that was kind of reimagined the original source material to be a little bit more about race. So I think there's definitely a comparison there. The other one, sorry, this is probably a change of topics, but I think the other inevitable media comparison is to another 2019 thing. Well, not 2019, it was 2018. But in 2019, it was the best picture winner at the Oscars, and that's Green Book.
Yeah, it's amazing because it literally is Green Book. Yeah, but from the Black perspective.
And I think obviously that's the better perspective to tell the story from.
Right.
And even just like having watched Green Book, it was pretty criticized for that, you know, that reason of just the perspective the story's told from, when it's very much a Black story, but it was told from the white man's perspective.
So I agree. I'm glad you actually said that because it kind of gets to this transition that I want to talk about. I agree. However, my biggest complaint about the first episode is that, so in the beginning, you know, there's this weird sci-fi sequence and it goes, then he goes to segregated South and it goes to Chicago and then it goes back to segregated Midwest and Northeast, right? My issue though with the show is that it is kind of similar to Green Book, is that like every white person in the premiere episode is like overwhelmingly racist, like not even like subtly racist, but like overtly racist, and to the point where it's like it's like kind of like cartoony, and it's like I'm not saying that like it's not a realistic perspective per se, but it's just like it's been done so many times, it's been shown so many times, and it offers nothing different than like the countless of other stories set in that time have shown. That like for me, all of that stuff, I was just like, I just wasn't that interested, or I was kind of bored because I'm like, yeah, I know 1950s were hella racist and like bad shit happened, but like you're not offering anything new to bring to the table with this aspect.
Well, I think one thing that was, it's probably not entirely new, but one of the big differences is like this doesn't take place in the Deep South. Like there's a big difference between, you know, the Jim Crow era South and the North, where you have this idea of like, you know, it's different than the South, but it's like, it's not overt racism usually, or at least it's hidden. You have the idea of like sundown towns where like, you know, technically some of it's integrated, but not really, because there are entire towns, or as we saw in the first episode of Lovecraft Country, you know, restaurants where they're supposed to serve Black people, but they do not. And in fact, the people who do, I think a lot of it was very subtle, but the restaurant that they visit in, I forget, it's not Devon County yet. It's one of the areas they go to.
It's like in Massachusetts somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a little subtle. And honestly, I think my biggest problem with the episode was more of like comprehension in some cases. A lot of the dialogue is not mixed very well, so you can very easily miss subtle things in the lines. I actually had to go back and watch a lot of the Chicago scenes with subtitles, because originally I watched it live on HBO, and I found myself kind of wondering like, wait, why is this character here now? Like, why is she going with them on this trip? And like, what is this, like, what is Uncle George's like thing? Oh, he publishes the Green Books apparently.
That was pretty straightforward for me actually.
It was just hard for me to hear it because of I guess the volume and the noise in the room at the time. But there was a lot of there was a lot of subtlety. Like one thing that like wasn't super overtly explained is when they go to the restaurant, it's kind of implied that they were going to that restaurant because it was supposed to be one of the like safe restaurants that he could add to the Green Book. And it turned out that, you know, when they walk in, the name is different than he thought it would be. Like it was supposed to be called Lydia's Diner, but the sign had a different name. And then later when Journey Smollett's character goes into the back, she overhears the waiter on the phone with someone, and he says something along the lines of, I didn't serve them. I wouldn't do that. Not after what you did to Lydia. So it's kind of implied. And then later they obviously find that they painted the walls white there, like the 1812 White House, to cover up like the burn marks. Cause they essentially set fire to this restaurant because the former owner allowed Black people to eat there.
Yeah. Right. So I actually found that to, maybe that's why I was bored, because I actually thought it was very straightforward with all that. Like, I got that entire sequence as it was happening. And again, it's more about the fact that I've just seen so much content about this era. And I've come to the point now where I am like, if you're going to talk about this era, and for it to be compelling to me, you have to show me a unique perspective or a unique style. And that part of the episode, because it's kind of like the normal reality part of the episode, just was not that interesting to me. I'm not trying to say it wasn't being realistic or didn't have something of value to say, but it's just as a viewer like me, it just wasn't interesting.
So one of the things, though, I think you have to admit is, while it may not have a unique perspective compared to the things you've seen, I think you have to admit it has a unique style. Even in the middle act of the show, the cinematography, and there's maybe some references that if you just watched it, I don't know if you've gone and read anything about it. So I don't know if you picked up on it, but there's references in the middle, a scene in the middle to a lot of famous photography of the era, and just the cinematography and the style of the, you know, the visual style of this entire episode, I think was pretty outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, so the I think no matter what, this is HBO, right? We've talked about this before, but there is always going to be a difference in production quality with an HBO show than basically any other show on any other network. And if this show was made on Netflix, it looks significantly worse. And that's just a fact to me. Because the quality of from not even just cinematography, but like set design, the costume designs are actually very, very well done. Makeup, it is aesthetically very much as good as you can expect for a period drama. So I think production wise was fantastic. There's like a chase sequence in the middle, and that's shot really well. But I think we've kind of spent some time, so we can, I think now if people are still listening and they don't want to get too spoilered, I think we can kind of get into the more spoilerific part of the episode, which is towards the end, because everything so far we've talked about is kind of in the beginning, and it's also pretty standard. It's just setting up kind of the rest of the story, right? Yeah. The main big takeaway of this episode, so now spoilers for those who want to leave, is that our cast of characters find themselves stuck in the middle of the woods at night with a bunch of racist cops, and they're about to get killed or lynched or whatever. And out of nowhere, motherfucking vampires come.
Vampire, I don't know, vampire blob.
It's like a wolf. It's like a werewolf vampire combo.
It's an H.P. Lovecraft monster, basically.
But it's also alien because it's like buggy because it has like multiple eyes.
Yeah, million eyes, million teeth. Classic. Yeah. All the classic H.P. Lovecraft things.
Yeah. And it goes full pulp, right? Because the characters, and because it's established that the characters are sci-fi nerds, you then buy the believability that they're not like completely shocked. Because like, as all of this is happening, these vampires come, they tear up the scene. Like the guy just says, "Hey, I think the light hurts them. We should shine light on them. They're vampires." Like the characters immediately recognize that these are vampires, and like, they are still in shock and awe, but like they're like kind of acting like you would expect a character in a 1950s horror film story to act, right? And so it goes full pulp, and chaos ensues, and they somehow get out of it. And then at the very end, they find themselves in this very strange house where someone is already awaiting them. And that's kind of where the story begins. So, or where the rest of the story will go. And so for me, I think this episode was very, I'll use the word, but I'm trying to use it in not a racial way, but it was actually segregated in how it did its different themes, right? That, cause it was like, it talked, it's like, we're going to do sci-fi in the beginning and sci-fi horror in the end, right? And we're going to do like racial historical drama in the middle. And then we're going to do this kind of like meta thing about Lovecrafting kind of like also in the beginning, but it never meshed it all together yet. And I'm not saying it needed to in the first episode, but what I'm interested to see is like how it actually starts to mesh these things. Cause right now it introduced all these concepts one by one, but we haven't seen them come together yet.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised you didn't bring up the scene before that, which I think was really one of the best scenes in this episode. But that idea of the low speed chase, I guess I'll call it.
I actually didn't like that. Cause I thought that was just too, I thought it was being too cinematic-y. It was actually cheapening the racial aspect of it.
I think it was telling, I think it's the same amount of pulp just applied to a different monster. Like that's what I think was relatively clever about it.
I thought it was actually handling that. I thought, I don't know. Cause like, it's like once the car is like banging up against you, you not speeding doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. So it's not, I don't think it was that scene itself that was good, but I think the point of it was, I think the fact that that was the scene that directly led into the, you know, the main epic climax with the vampire blob things. I think that's relevant because the entire show is like, it's almost like the vampires or whatever they are, once they show up, it's almost like they're not the most scary thing that was happening, like, or the most threatening. Like I think some of the, you know, comments and critical coverage that I was reading about said they were almost relieved when the, you know, when the real like alien monsters came, because the, and I think this is going to be a recurring theme in the rest of the episodes is, you know, which, like it's telling a story about two horrors at the same time. And one of those horrors is white supremacy in the 1950s era. And another is, you know, monsters. So I expect that. I think they did a good job of weaving those two together in this first episode. And I would expect that to continue just given all the themes that were laid out.
So here's my somewhat push. I totally get that sentiment. My feelings are that stories that just, and this kind of gets back to just me as a viewer, if you don't get into the interesting aspects of looking into, if you're just looking at the horror of segregation and 1950s racism, I don't, there's really good documentaries and stories that have been told, many of them, which get into the gist and reality of it all. For me, if you're just going to say it was horrific, that actually for me isn't that much anymore. Because
I don't want to say horrific. I'm saying horror in the genre terms. Like they shot they shot that as it's similar to Chernobyl, actually, where Chernobyl, a lot of people argued, was a 5-episode miniseries that was, most of it was shot as a horror series where the radiation and the fallout was the monster in Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what they were going for here.
Anything that's affecting your fear, anything that's connecting to your concept of fear is going to be a horror, no matter what that is. It doesn't have to be a monster. It can just, whatever is getting to your fear. So I agree, Chernobyl is in some ways is a horror. I don't disagree. I guess what I'm saying is that like, I just don't actually care that much about showing the horrors of, I don't care about showing just like the general horrors of like 1950s segregation. If you're just going to tell it just like how it's been told in the past, right? Now, what I find more interesting is telling the horror of Lovecraft's racism, right? Because, like we alluded to earlier, I think it is interesting to get into how does an author who was so racist tell stories that can connect to the people who he was racist towards, right? That to me is very compelling. And that's where I'm kind of focusing my attention on a lot. But just telling a horror story about the 1950s American racial divide, it does it better than Green Book the movie, because Green Book the movie sucks. But like, yeah. But like, that shouldn't be the bar, right? Like, there's
I think I see what you're saying, and I agree that should not be like, I don't think that should be the primary story, but I think it's the perfect backdrop.
It is a good backdrop. No, story. I think they've created a great what's the word I'm looking for? Like environment, right? Like it is, I am interested in the world that they have established in this first episode, right? Because at the end of the day, it is a fantasy world, right? Like it's based in reality, but this is obviously not reality because there is alien vampires in the end of this episode, right? So I think what every debut episode needs to do is make the viewer understand what is the world that they're getting themselves into and having them interested in exploring it further. It doesn't have to have all the questions yet. It doesn't even have to give any answers yet. It can have a lot of unknowns, but it needs to at least create a world that's like, I know what I'm getting at, right? And I think this does as well. So I am optimistic for the next 9 episodes to see where it goes. I think like any show, it can go way better than I thought it would go. It can go a lot worse. So I have no idea. That's kind of the fun about watching a TV show week to week.
So there's one more, I think, since you keep using the word reality, there's one more subject I want to bring up, because I almost feel like that in and of itself is a theme. And it goes back to the transition between when they leave Chicago and when they start getting on the road and get into Lovecraft country. They have a really great transition. And this is where most of the great cinematography that's mimicking, real world famous photographs from the era comes into play. And it's visually, you're seeing all these things, to the audio of a famous, speech from a debate. I forgot the name.
James Baldwin.
Yeah. Baldwin. Yeah. So Baldwin is talking about, and they pick the words from the speech, very carefully, because he's talking about, he's talking about the nature of reality and kind of arguing that different people in the original context of that debate, he's talking about how, white people and black people have different realities. And so their experience and the way they react to things is shaped by their reality. And I think that also kind of came back in the end where, when the vampires went crazy and the racist sheriff gets bit by one, he ends up like saying something in the middle of all this going on after he's basically watched like half his racist cop buddies get eaten by them. Atticus says something about monsters and he just like insists and shouts at him that monsters aren't real, which is like that line I just think is super relevant. Because it's like, he just saw it, like, but he lives in one reality and insists on staying in that reality despite what he just saw. And that is a very interesting, if not kind of sad subject, that they did a good job of showing in this episode, because we live in an era where people are definitely living in different realities. It's only gotten worse because of the whole, the algorithm problem with social media, but also people are seeing things, they're seeing video of things and still rejecting what their eyes can see right in front of them, in the same way that this, this officer is rejecting the existence of monsters when he clearly just saw them.
So I'll push back though and say that the same guy though asked for the flashlight because he says, "In case you're right, I'll take."
Yeah, it's like cognitive dissonance, right? Like, yeah. I think it all, like, that's completely
right. So
it's just very timely. I think the show is going to do well and came out. This was the correct summer for this show to be released.
Did you notice? I don't believe it was green screened after the fact. I think they just got it right. Do you notice that they had that Aunt Jemima racial imagery in the show? Which is very timely given that they have changed, obviously. They are getting rid of that visuals moving forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that shot and many of the other shots during that whole sequence were just very well done. I mean, that even just before that, the scene at the gas station where he throws the banana at that guy making fun of him, that I think that was one of the best sequences, like, just visually in the entire show.
I actually forgot to bring this up, but I meant to bring it up in the beginning. We'll see how it goes, and I don't know if they're going to go back to it, but I am very interested to see if they're going to actually talk about the black soldier's perspective of the Korean War, because the Korean War is already a part of military history that is not really discussed in America too much. And the few times that it is, it's almost solely from a white perspective. So we really have had extremely limited amount of stories about black soldiers in the Korean War. And so the show kind of teases this because it has Atticus call assume was a Korean lover of some sorts.
I remember that because it's when I was first watching that, I'm like, he's saying way too many numbers. And then the operator says South Korea. And I was like, oh, he's calling South Korea. And
So, I mean, because if you're a soldier in the 1950s, like, the only war you would have fought would have been the Korean War. Like, he wasn't, Atticus is too young to be in World War II. So he would have, the only war he would have fought. So I don't know. It could have just been a small thing they just have and then, like, it'll come out. Yeah,
there was also the reason I think the groundwork is definitely there. That phone call scene was one I completely forgot about it until I went and rewatched parts of it. But there was another thing that I didn't pick up on in the first watch where there was a subtle moment where he was walking. It was a really short scene, but he basically just kind of walks by a black army recruiter getting young black man to sign some papers, and he just gives him like this very subtle look, and then they kind of move on. Like, there was a lot of stuff that happened in that Chicago act of the episode that I feel like I still didn't pick up on everything.
Well, they connected that later at the end because it's clear that his father, who's missing, did not approve of him going to the army. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he has clear regrets going from that perspective. He has probably regrets just going because of what any soldier has regrets about joining the military. I don't know if that recruiter was the same recruiter that he had. So that's, he knew the guy, or if it was just a random recruiter. I think that's never established. But one last thing I want to pick up on, I think we should wrap up, is that the show also is very much a family drama. Every character, all the three main characters, have very different familial issues that are going on and are shown in this episode. So I think that's going to be kind of the core emotional piece that's going to drive the show, because I think you kind of need that kind of melodrama always in these type of high concept shows, right? Like, when you have a high concept drama, like, you need the kind of over the top sci-fi, whatever genre element. You need some social contextual element. But then I think for you to care about the characters as humans, you need that melodrama. And I think that's how they're going to really establish that. Because I'll just say, like, for his uncle, right? I cared more about the fate of his uncle because I was like, oh, like he just called his wife to tell his wife that like he loved her, and like his daughter and him have this great relationship. So it's like,
yeah,
I cared about, even in episode one, I'm like, I know Atticus is going to live, but like they could kill Uncle George in episode one. Like it's not totally impossible.
That was something some other people were right? discussing, is like the two leads have a lot of plot armor, but
right.
Uncle George could die at any time. So
right.
it's a little more.
So I was kind of like, I was like, it's only one episode, but I already kind of care if Uncle George dies. So
yeah, they did a really good job of introducing him in his first scene.
So I think that family melodrama, which gets to this concept of like universal stories, right? Which is the meta thing that I think the show is about. It's like, how do you connect to these stories beyond from different demographics? I think the family melodrama is going to be that core emotion for this show. So, it's balancing a lot of different things. You and I have talked before that it's always great when a show wants to do all these different things, but it's over a 10 episode season, and this is just a one-time thing, right? It's not a full
I believe it's a mini series.
Over 10 episodes,
or a limited series.
Over 10 episodes, it's a lot to juggle, and I'm always going to be hesitant because I've seen more failures than successes, but we'll just have to wait and see. We had a success, a show similar to me, not similar in necessarily exactly, but like I thought Devs is another high concept drama that we had this year that managed a bunch of different things all at the same time, and it was success. So
yeah,
maybe this will repeat that.
Yeah, so I guess to wrap things up, what are your overall impressions based on the first episode?
So good first episode. If you are a fan of either sci-fi, horror, pulp, period drama, right? I think, and obviously if you're a fan of all three, this is the perfect show for you. It will be the mystery aspect of like, who's in the house, that the girl in the car, how she's connected to it all, how his dad comes into the picture, that will unravel. I have no reason to think it's going to be great. I have no reason to think it's going to be bad from that perspective. But I'm optimistic. I'll be honest, if this was a Netflix show, I would not be optimistic because Netflix is notorious for having good first episodes and then shitty episodes afterwards. Mm-hmm. So same with Showtime. So as an HBO show, I'm very optimistic.
Yeah, I have high hopes as well. I'm just looking at my rough draft of the best of 2020 list, and I think if it continues at its current pace, it will easily break top five. Devs is currently sitting at number one on that list, by the way. So I think that's the benchmark. Is if it can be better than Devs, then it would be. It'll overthrow Hulu, which currently has, I think, all five of the top spots, actually. Yeah, we did a whole episode on that. Was Little Fires Everywhere Hulu?
Yeah.
That was on Hulu? Yeah, so all five of actually my top of this year have been Hulu shows. So this might be HBO's last chance to break into the top five, which I think it will if it continues this level of quality.
But Hulu's going to come back with a vengeance in 1 month, which could actually be our next episode.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, that's a good segue into what are we looking forward to. It's actually 40 days. I was just looking at my app. So
yeah, well, that's what I'm most looking forward to is season premiere, finally, of Fargo.
Finally September. Got its premiere date, season 4.
It was supposed to come out in March, got delayed due to coronavirus. I'm not even sure if they finished filming or if they just said, we're just going to hope and pray that we finish filming by the time before it finishes.
Yeah, it looks like currently only 3 episodes have an air date. So hopefully they actually
we'll
do continue
to air
the rest of it. Is it not finished? Is that a thing?
I thought that was the whole point, that they were still not wrapped up like the last episode or two, before like the shutdown happened. So who knows? But that is easily also a show set in 1950s. But that show is easily going to be that's the most anticipated show I will have for the rest of the year. I have extremely high expectations for it. And so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, this has been our recap of the first episode of Lovecraft Country. I guess we will, talk about it again after many episodes. I think it's 10. Yeah, after 10
episodes. So it'll be like 10 or 9 or 10 weeks, depending on our schedule.
All right. So the next month will probably be some Emmys-related content as that all wraps up in late September. And then likely a lot of discussion about Fargo coming up after that.
Yeah. A lot. If you're into 1950s stories, we got you covered between this and Fargo for the next couple months.
Yeah, this is the year for you.
This is the year. 70 years later. But yeah, until next time. Peace.
All right. That's it.
Damn, we got it under an hour. We did it. We did it.
My father. He wrote me. Said we have a secret legacy. A birthright that's been kept from us. Lovecraft Country. I need to let go.